from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, the Soccer World Cup returns to Brazil with the usual fervent excitement in the midst of controversy and concern. There were 13 teams back in 1950, the last time Brazil hosted, and now there are 32. There are also some 60% of Brazilians, according to polls, unhappy with the expenditures, and there have been massive protests, as well as strikes by workers, teachers, police, and public transportation workers occurring throughout the country. We'll focus on the response to the World Cup in Brazil, as well as the ongoing outrage over alleged corrupt practices, vote buying, and scandal linked to FIFA, the World Cup governing body. Then at 9:30, we look at the competition itself as we preview the game. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. The 2014 World Cup kicks off in Brazil on June 12th, that's this Thursday, with an estimated 1 billion soccer fans across the globe expected to watch. But a Pew Research Center poll finds that 61% of Brazilians think hosting the event is bad for the country and shifts money away from healthcare, schools, and other public services. There are also concerns that ongoing strikes by public transport workers and protests by Brazilians upset over the event's high costs could escalate and disrupt the games. And in this opening forum segment, we discuss the concerns in Brazil over costs and expenditures and the ongoing scandal linked to FIFA, the World Cup's governing body. We go first to São Paulo. Tullio Sazzone is with the Associated Press. He writes for them, and he joins us from São Paulo. And good to have you with us on Forum this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me.
I guess let's begin, if we could, by getting an update on the subway strike. Is this making it difficult for people? Are they concerned that they're not going to even be able to get there?
It is a concern, Michael, and the strike was supposed to be over yesterday. It didn't happen, despite a court ruling against the subway operators. So today, traffic has been chaotic here in São Paulo, and we have to remember the main means of transportation to the Taquerão Stadium, where the opening match is going to be played on Thursday. That's by subway. Well, the problem FIFA is concerned, so far there hasn't been a solution to it.
Well, you also have a lot of disappointed fans. As I understand it, less than half the tickets that were supposed to be available for the opening match are simply not available to the public.
That's correct. And from the 61,000 people expected in the opening match on Thursday, only 25,000 went directly to the fans. The rest of the tickets went to sponsors, to local organizers. So it is a surprising number, and it's up to the fans who tried to get tickets for this match. This match was one of the most coveted tickets to get, and a lot of people will have to watch it from TV.
And the stadiums were not completed on time, so you have fans who have tickets but no seats and seat numbers that don't correspond to valid seats. It sounds like a mess.
Yes, it was problematic, and FIFA had to say that they had to change about 14 or 1,500 tickets from people who actually their tickets do not correspond to where they would sit in the stadium. They had to put cameras, they had to move media tribunes after the stadiums were completed. So they had to tell people, listen, where the ticket we gave you is not valid anymore. You have to come and swap them.
And what about the upgrading of the airports? Is there going to be delays there as well? Do you know?
Well, the airports, it's been known for a while that they're not going to be ready, not as the government wanted. They were not able to. They started work too late, so they were not able to finish everything they wanted to do in time. So what's out there now, it's what's going to be available to fans. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Again, Tullio Sazzone joining us from São Paulo is an Associated Press sports writer, and I thank you so much for being with us. We want to bring actually Katie Watson into the discussion. She's a business reporter with the BBC, covers South America for the BBC. Katie Watson, good to have you on Forum.
Hi, nice to be here.
You're also in São Paulo, and I guess there, like throughout the country, that is throughout Brazil, there's a lot of anger over inflation and government corruption, and the economy is ground to a halt. Brazil may be soccer mad, but they seem to be mad about the World Cup. That is angry.
That's right. I was down at the protests today, and early in the morning it was a tense situation. But there were about 300 protesters. But nevertheless, the authorities were really not taking any chances. Riot police were deployed, helicopters circling overhead, tear gas was thrown to disperse the protesters. But this is not just about the metro workers' strike. It's not just about pay rises. It's about the grievances against the government. But the metro strike's worth saying is just one of several labour unions that have been pushing for higher pay in recent months. We had rubbish collectors in Rio. We've had police in the northeast of Brazil, and they walked off the job. It led to looting. So they're really stepping up their efforts to ask for and demand more. Inflation's around 6%. People feel that their wages are being eroded. But it's also an opportunity as well. You've got the World Cup. You've also got the elections coming up in October. So it's an opportunity really for organised unions to be able to make their mark and make their point when the government is obviously under quite a lot of pressure.
And the riot police were using tear gas today against the protesters in Sao Paulo?
At one point they were. Early in the morning they were to disperse the protesters. It seemed to me that they were doing everything they could to make sure that there was no hint of unrest, because we're not talking big numbers. And I think that's worth pointing out, that the numbers of the protests are increasing. There were certain housing movements, social movements, and they all gathered together and walked down to the centre of town. But this is nothing like the scale that we saw last year in Brazil. People here have different grievances as well, and I think that's really important. It's not just one thing that people are annoyed about. You've got housing movements saying there's not enough money being spent on housing. Other people saying, you know, we need more money in terms of pay, healthcare, education. People have different grievances, but they're uniting in the fact that they'd like to make their points made against the government.
And it's an opportunity for them. I mean, just to be pragmatic about it, from the perspective of the timing with the World Cup, the government, as you say, election coming up, there's less popularity for Dilma Rousseff than there was for her predecessor, Lula. But I want to also get at really the heart of this in terms of money. But a lot of taxpayer money was used, and this was supposed to be private financing, a lot of it. The stadium cost about twice as much as the last couple of World Cups in South Africa and West Germany. That's according to the Wall Street Journal.
I think that's one of the big issues, is this perceived spending of a lot of the World Cup and the stadium and the stadia and the infrastructure projects. But it's also about broken promises, because when Brazil was given the right to host the World Cup, Brazil was at a stage where the economy was soaring. It was in 2007. It was doing really well. It was the darling of the BRICS countries. But now we're looking at in terms of economic growth, in the first 3 months of this year, the economy grew just 0.2%. People here are frustrated. Inflation is rising. It's around 6%, as I said. So people here are feeling, you know, we grew a lot in the last 10 years. We did really well. There's 40 million people who have moved into the new middle classes. But now what? And I think Brazil's at this stage where it has gone very well. It's now slowing. But what next? And I think that's a concern. Investor confidence is down, consumer confidence is down, and people are saying, you know, the stadiums that, you know, in terms of infrastructure projects that were related to the World Cup, billions of dollars spent on it, was that the money that, you know, needed to be spent? Should it have gone elsewhere?
Again, Katie Watson with us from Sao Paulo. She is a business reporter with the BBC and covers South America. And thank you so much for joining us on Forum. I want to bring in Roger Kittleson, who is a professor of history at Williams College. He's author of The Country of Football, Soccer, and the Making of Modern Brazil. He's with us this morning by phone from West Hartford, Connecticut. We welcome you, Roger Kittleson. Professor Kittleson, good to have you with us.
Good to be with you.
Let's just go right to the heart of this. There tends to be attempts to use leverage during World Cups. I mean, we saw this happening, for example, in South Africa. We saw it happening in 2010 there, and also it's happening again in Brazil. I mean, it works in Brazil. The federal police and the garbage workers in Rio already have had success because of strikes, and probably because of the political pressure that the government felt to act because they wanted things to go off well.
Yeah, well, workers in Brazil of all realms have, you know, a long history of this kind of striking, and the World Cup is, as you said, a unique opportunity because the pressure is on, and they can use it to their advantage. But because of a history of inflation, they've you know, they have always had trouble getting their salaries to just, you know, stay stable in real terms. And so when something like this presents itself, they have to jump on it, and they have.
Well, there's also been a turn, as we've said, in terms of the economy. But this is right now what we're seeing is more strikes for political advantage or to take advantage of the fact that the World Cup is there than we're seeing demonstrations. It's kind of turned, hasn't it, toward more strikes?
It has, and partly this is because of the you know, the very diverse nature of the protest, as the other guests have mentioned. This reflects, you know, a very widespread discontent in Brazil, with not only, you know, the World Cup itself, but really more broadly, you know, what the way that the government has handled the preparations for the World Cup. Brazil's in a kind of golden age of democracy right now, and an optimist could look at what's going on and say that this is a really exciting moment because so many Brazilians, including young people who young and middle class people who've been, you know, traditionally pretty apolitical, are out on the streets, and they're pushing very different causes, often disagreeing with themselves, but, you know, really pushing for a deepening of democracy, and it's pretty exciting. Scary for the organizers, but I think that's kind of the point.
Well, we are going to see how this all unfolds. There have been in the past thoughts that from both sides, governmental sides as well as those protesting, that the World Cup would bring all kinds of changes. If you may recall, back in South Africa, there was a talk about the World Cup turning the tide on poverty and conflict in Mobeki, South Africa. There was talk about better relations between South Korea and Japan back in 2002 when South Korea hosted the World Cup. These things were not necessarily brought into fruition. But what are your expectations about the World Cup, either politically or in terms of what we see in the way of protests and strikes? This is a half-hour segment. We're going to continue with Professor Kittleson, but we would like to hear from you, and we'd like to invite your calls, and let me do that. It's toll-free, and you can join us with any thoughts you might have or questions about the ongoing concerns in Brazil and the ongoing concerns generally about soccer fans that this will come off, well, as particularly hope seems to elevate the notion that it will come off well. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786, and you can join us now at that number. We do invite your calls, as I said, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. It's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have immediately onto our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Might want to hear from you also about FIFA, and I'd like to hear what Professor Kittleson has to say, because as many of you know, there's been a great deal of concern about the scandal, particularly about the selection of Qatar for 2022 to hold the World Cup, charges of vote buying and bribery and all sorts of allegations along those lines. What do we really know, Roger Kittleson?
Well, what we know at this point is that FIFA went against some reports by respected experts about just the logic of holding a World Cup in the physical climate of Qatar. We also know that some of the key players made some illegal payments, and what is being alleged is that these were, in fact, the actions that shifted the vote and that gave Qatar the World Cup. There is an ongoing investigation right now by former U.S. Attorney Michael Garcia, who is a new head of ethics at FIFA, which some would call a rather oxymoronic title, but he seems to be doing a respectable job. But he's just announced that he's not going to consider the latest evidence that's come out from the Times of London, which is causing a little bit of an uproar because it is really damning information if it can be proven, namely that the Qatari Mohammed bin Hamman, who was the former head of the Asian Football Confederation, made millions of dollars of illegal payments to basically buy the World Cup for his country. So we're awaiting the report, but so far there's been some fresh disappointment over Garcia's handling of it.
FIFA also said back in 2010 that over a billion people watch at least part of the World Cup games. Is that number inflated, or is that, can we trust the accuracy of that?
I would not be surprised that's true. That seems it's an incredibly popular event. That's why FIFA can use it to its own advantage, and can impose the kind of really heavy-handed conditions it does on host countries. I mean, it's going to walk out away from Brazil no matter what happens. FIFA's got a guaranteed profit of somewhere near $3 billion.
And what about, and by the way, listeners, how much does football or soccer mean to you would be also a question I'd like to put, because we keep hearing that unless you're from a foreign country and you're still rooting for the country that you consider your home country or your country of origin, Americans don't really give much concern or care about following the World Cup or following soccer in general, for that matter, that it doesn't really mean a whole lot to them. And you may want to comment on that as well. Or if you're a Brazilian, you may want to comment on what the sport means to you. And I'd like to hear from Roger Kittleson, who's written a whole book on that, about what the sport means to Brazilians. I mean, there's a long history there. They're known as some of the most soccer fanatic people on the planet.
They are. And to some extent, that's exaggerated, because insofar as it downplays the passion of other countries' fans for the sport, but soccer has a special place in Brazilian history, because it's something around which Brazil has built its national identity. It's an area, it's a part of Brazilian culture, of national culture, where in which Brazil has sort of talked about race and how to modernize the country. Talked about it sometimes in very indirect ways, but this has been a place, for Brazilians to talk about what their nation is, what they want it to be, who they think should be included in the active citizenry. It's been a central part of the country, and the fact that they've had so much success, the only country to win 5 times in World Cup competitions, the only country to participate in all of the World Cups to this point, that's just given them a tremendous amount of national pride as well.
But there is a tremendous amount of anger now about the costs and about the screw-ups with respect to...
Absolutely. And the protesters, last June, around the time of the Confederations Cup, which is a kind of warm-up, sort of dress rehearsal 1 year before the World Cup, some of the signs, tried to make clear that this was not about soccer per se, not about the World Cup per se, but really about the way that the government and FIFA were handling it. Because they're, the demands that both the government and FIFA and some of their corporate partners they impose are really draconian, and they give a kind of sovereignty to FIFA over parts of Brazilian national territory during the tournament, and that's even without talking about all of the billions of dollars that are going to a sporting event, what has to remain in the end a sporting event, with this in a country where public education, public health systems are notoriously poor and very poorly funded, and so this has been just something that's outraged a lot of Brazilians.
Including a lot of the indigenous people who are out there, attempting to march to the national stadium. We're talking, by the way, with Roger Kittleson, who is professor of history at Williams College and author of The Country of Football, Soccer, and the Making of Modern Brazil. He's with us from West Hartford, Connecticut. And by the way, FIFA is FIFA. It stands for the Federación Internacional de Football Association. And listeners are saying, at least a couple have called in, want to acknowledge that the rest of the world calls this sport football, not soccer. And I will certainly acknowledge that. But in the meantime, you are welcome to join the program. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Or you can email us, forum@kqed.org. And let's go to Genesio as our first caller here. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. Good morning, Alan. It's a quick comment. I went to Palo Alto in 1994 to see Brazil and USA, July 4th.
Yeah.
And the conditions at the stadium was not that good. I was sitting on a wooden bench, and I had to pay lots of money for my ticket. But at the end, I enjoyed the game, because I'm a big soccer fan, and I think Brazil will be the same. I mean, people that are coming to Brazil, they're going to find the warmest of the Brazilian people, and the games is always fun. It's a great thing to do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. But we have stadiums that are not complete. We have tickets that have been sold that are not available. I mean, the reports we're getting here, Roger Kittleson, do not necessarily inspire the most sort of optimistic attitudes that we just heard from our caller.
He's got a good point, though, because I think once the games start, the people who are able to be in the stadiums, and it's a select portion of the world's population and an even more select portion of the Brazilian population, the ones who have seats especially will enjoy it, and they will get into it during the Confederations Cup in last year, in spite of the protest outside and the tear gas that wafted into the stadiums. It was an exciting tournament, and the Brazilian fans very beautifully continued on singing the second verse of the national anthem a cappella after the music cut off, which was quite a spectacle. But it will obviously be all set against the protests that are going on outside. So there's going to be this you know, jarring contrast throughout. The good of Brazil will come through, but you know, the mess and the protests will always be there, and that's what's concerning people like President Dilma, like Pelé, like the former great player Ronaldo, who's said that he's embarrassed. By the way,
he said he was appalled by the $900 million in public funds. It was three times the estimate.
Which. You know, is a feeling that obviously a lot of Brazilians have as well. The difficulty they had with his statement is that, you know, until very recently he was very much in bed with the organizers of the Cup, and so you know, his recent comments have just been a flip flop, and that's really upset Brazilians more than what he actually said.
You going to be heading down there, Professor, or you have any favorites you want to mention here before we move on to another segment?
I am actually not going, which was a kind of momentous decision, and I will be watching every single game and cheering madly for Brazil. I think Spain and Germany have very good chances as well. I have a very deep fear that comes from my long time in Brazil. Argentina is looking frighteningly good, short of you know, once if Brazil loses, then for Brazil fans, you know, the worst thing that can happen is Argentina wins.
Well, we appreciate your spending this time with us, and before we say goodbye to you, where did you become so involved in Brazil, or how did you become so involved in Brazil and its history, and particularly its history in soccer?
I grew up with Brazil. My family had Brazilian friends when I was growing up, and so I've been going down there since I was a kid. And when I was down there and living in Rio and Porto Alegre in the early 90s, it was a particularly interesting moment because the national team was pretty terrible by its own lofty standards. And the comments that were made on TV and in the newspapers revolved around the racial makeup of the team. That is, people were just saying on TV that the team was too white.
Well, again, appreciate your spending this time with us. And Roger Kittleson is the author of Country of Football, Soccer, and the Making of Modern Brazil. He's a professor of history at Williams College. We're going to return for another segment. And again, I'm going to put the question out to listeners. Do you care about the World Cup? Do you follow it? Especially for those of you who are native-born Americans or American citizens because of birth? Or do you root for the World Cup because you see it under the flag of your home of origins? We're going to talk to soccer columnist Alan Black in the next segment. He's all about telling us what the games are going to look like when we return. I'm Michael Krasny.